Mini episode 809 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to one of our favorite FDH Lounge episodes of the year. It's our FDH Lounge Super Bowl preview. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross, your favorite football talkers anywhere. We've been breaking it down for you week by week throughout the NFL season. And I have to say, it's all on the line for me this week. My quest to duplicate the impossible miracle of a year ago of being above 52.4% for the season. I needed to go 8-3 in the playoffs, and I am one win away from exactly doing that. I'm going to give out a total on the game as well, but in true Kyle Ross fashion, not a recommended total. I'm just going to give you what I think the score is going to be, but I'm going to only give you a pick on the side, as I've been doing all year long on this. And speaking of my good friend Kyle Ross, we got him on the phone lines now. Good to bring him in to break down football one last time for the 2016-2017 NFL season. It's here, my man, one of the greatest days of the year, Super Bowl Sunday, and this is going to be a lot of fun to break down, as always.
Well, I'll tell you what, if either of these teams have a half-hour performance like I have just turned in off air, they have absolutely lost Super Bowl 51. What a sad display by yours truly.
Well, you sound like you need a palate cleanse, so I'll give you one here. I trust by this point in time that the audience out there indulges us in our wrestling nerd humor. So I have an example from mutual friend and FDH Lounge dignitary Jake Digman's Royal Rumble party from last week. So one of his friends shows up. His friend Adam, who's a good guy and a real funny guy, shows up, and he's got, like, the black duster trench coat like the Undertaker's got. He's also got black old-style Undertaker's hat. He's also got a championship belt. So at one point in time, he goes to put it on. He stands up. He puts the hat on. He puts the belt over his shoulder. I, out of the corner of my eye, happen to catch a glimpse of something here. I had brought with me one of these gigantic Utz potato chip cans. They're not potato chips, potato sticks, the barbecue ones. They are gluten-free, which is important to me these days. So I had brought this with me, and I see it sitting there. I'm thinking, that's right about urn size, isn't it? So I pick the thing up. I go over one knee in front of him as I'm holding the can up. And people immediately just start taking pictures on their phone. And I'm now begging all of them, like, please, please, I want a copy of that to show my nephew. Like, that's wrestling nerd humor at its finest, Kyle.
I don't know if that was supposed to make me feel better, and quite frankly, I don't know what it made me feel. I'll be honest with you.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? That happened in the year 2016-17?
All I know is I don't know how to keep time, and I don't like how, if you go to the Zoop here by my new house, how you order at the right side of the counter. Usually most places you order at the left when you get funneled in. It was very confusing. I didn't like it. And we're starting a half hour later. If I can take everyone behind the curtain than we were originally supposed to. But I'm here, and I suppose I should reference Super Bowl 51 here a little bit, the actual game.
Okay.
I'll be honest with you, Ricky. My breakdown of this game may be referencing an article on ESPN.com and then saying that may or may not be true, because I'll be honest with you, I don't have a good take on this game at all.
I'm basically going off of what I would call sort of educated instinct at this point, so I'm comfortable basically putting out a lot of stuff out there for you to react to, because I've come up with my usual amount of statistical drivel and other types of things here going into the big game. And this is a thing where, again, I love the Super Bowl. It's probably my favorite sporting event from a historical perspective. And I'm going to date myself by saying this here, but like when I was a little kid, McDonald's, you could get those History of the Super Bowl magazines. And I think maybe each one of them would have like a separate Super Bowl that it was written about. And, it's just a thing where I've always been deep into the history of it and just really kind of enjoyed it a lot. And I spoke on the Championship Sunday broadcast that we did about how that's a day for more for pure football fans. This is going to be a day where you're going to be bumping into people that are like, hey, I heard that New England coach is kind of grumpy. And people who refer to the New England quarterback as Tim Brady, albeit I'm stealing that one from the great fantasy football sitcom The League. But that's the kind of crap that we're going to have to deal with the casuals here this weekend.
Who doesn't know who Tom Brady is?
Well, that's
I feel
Tim
like
Brady
most people by this point. Like I'm going to be, like, at a party I know, and I would be stunned if someone did not know who Tom Brady was. And I'm generally pretty forgiving for people not knowing things. Like, it doesn't bother me at all. To be honest with you, I'm just looking forward to the fact that I could freaking drink. I've had this flu for over a week that hasn't done me any favors. So, but yeah,
well,
I think everyone
I
knows who Tom Brady is at this point. Yes, everyone knows who Tom Brady is at this point. I just hate the commercials are on in person. That is bad.
Right.
That's
commercials
bad.
Guy. And you got to admit, there will in all likelihood be people at various parties around here who, okay, say what you will about New England, but like Atlanta, they probably couldn't name you one player, coach, or front office person from the Falcons because they're not a household name kind of a team. You know there's going to be those people floating around Super Bowl parties this week.
I mean, not a lot of people, to be fair, know who's in the front office of teams they don't follow. I think you're being kind of harsh on people in general. Like, I mean,
they don't know that Thomas
Dimitroff
comes from the New England tree? People don't know that?
I would not expect anyone to know that, really. Like, I mean, unless if you, like, really follow football, like, I wouldn't expect people to know that. Why would you expect somebody to know that?
Well, coaches or players, people who've never heard of Matty Ice, people who've never heard of Julio Jones, Dan Quinn, that's what I'm saying. You know there are those people floating around.
Yeah, I mean, yes, Atlanta is certainly the unknown factor. I think the consensus view is, you know, in the tired narrative, it's the big game experience versus the new kid on the block. And, I mean, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, you know, New England has
a
big game experience
the
first
that.
Time they won the Super Bowl. So,
unsurprisingly, I have a decent amount to say about that as we get going here. But as is traditional for us, we always like to take a look backwards here just to kind of sum up from things here. So things about Championship Sunday, the only thing I got to say is I do remember that at the time you thought it was unduly sort of reductionist of me perhaps to say Pittsburgh always gets pwned by New England. Here we go again.
Oh, here you
and
go.
Yeah,
here you
that's
go.
Exactly how it played out.
Oh, okay, well, you know what else played out? Atlanta fucking tattooed Green Bay, pal, okay? So let's not cherry-pick the one we got right and the one we got wrong. Because Aaron Rodgers, I mean, I'll tell you what, this guy about the second quarter, I think was ready to call up Dad, okay? The ass-whipping he took, okay? In that game. So, yeah, I was wrong about the Steelers, but I was right on the Falcons.
Well, I'm just saying that you thought that my reasoning was suspect. And basically my reasoning was, You tell me that Pittsburgh and New England are playing, and I already know how it's going to play out. I don't think I need to know anything else. I got 15 years worth of experience, including now 3 AFC championship games, to tell me that one. So that's the thing I think it was a little bit of kind of like shoot the messenger. Of course I hate the Squealers, but it doesn't mean I was wrong about that.
I don't think I hated that message. I simply tried making the point, and I was wrong. One thing I will admit, absolutely, is apparently Pittsburgh can go 2 games with completely sucking in the red zone, because they did.
Well, yeah, and that's something that's going to tell us a lot about New England's defense coming into this week here, and what is going to be a very, very interesting Super Bowl, and it is going to be one that we're going to see playing out for the second time, a Super Bowl here at this particular stadium in Houston. NRG Stadium. By the way, a little bit of nerd trivia here up front. Third time now in Super Bowl history that two teams from the same division have met up in consecutive times at a stadium site. You will remember that it was New England, Carolina meeting up the same two divisions. The previous Super Bowl in this stadium in 2004, the Janet Jackson Nipplegate game, as is best remembered.
Oh.
The two times previously, New Orleans, Super Bowls 12 and 15, you had Dallas, Denver, Oakland, Philly, both the same divisions represented there. And, of course, the Orange Bowl, Super Bowls 10 and 14, Pittsburgh and Dallas both times in consecutive meetings in that stadium. So the third time that we get a rematch of teams from a division in each conference meeting up here, the kickoff is alleged to be at 6:30, according to USA Today Sports Weekly. I don't think that's ever happened. I don't think they've ever kicked it off right on the button then. It's usually like, you know, the beginning of, this is the final part of the pregame, folks, brought to you by. So who knows when exactly it's going to be. I'll say sometime, you know, 10, 15 minutes afterwards, to be generous. The game on Fox, Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Aaron Andrews, Chris Myers on the call. National anthem be performed by Luke Bryan. Halftime show by Lady Gaga, which certainly makes me long for the days of counter-programming like MTV Deathmatch or something like that. I really wish we had something like
hold
that
on.
Going on, or In Living Color.
Hold on.
Makes me wish.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on.
What?
All right, look, I'm no fan of Lady Gaga either, but you're going to gloss
right.
over Luke Bryan? Like,
that's
he's pretty
bad.
Luke Bryan is frickin' horse manure.
Yeah, I'll give you that, but it's the national anthem. It's not 20 minutes of my life I'll never get back. You know what I mean? The national anthem is more inoffensive to me because it's like 2 minutes, basically.
Oh.
So that's why I was looking at it that way.
I'm kind of scratching my head here that you're entertaining. Oh, well, the national anthem is more inoffensive to me. I thought you would have a stronger take on our national anthem.
Well, if it's done by somebody I don't like, if it's done poorly, if it's whatever, there's always the chance that it's going to be done well, in which it will be much better than inoffensive. Whitney Houston, I think Super Bowl 25 probably set the bar permanently on that one there. So you hope for inoffensive, but it's generally inoffensive at worst, unless it's, you know, when Roseanne Barr did the national anthem and scratched herself and spit, it wasn't at the Super Bowl. So we don't generally have to be faced with that on Super Bowl Sunday. So I guess that's more my general point. But this is a game where the line is New England laying 3 points. It has been solid at that all week. The over-under, which I don't generally get into each and every week just because of time constraints, but for this one we might as well. 57 had gone up as high as 58.5, settled back in at 58 as of when we are recording this. Looking at the statistical breakdown between the teams here, strength of schedule based off of the final FDH Lounge power rankings for the season. New England 32, Atlanta 22. So the Patriots with a real glass jaw, Atlanta only a little bit better there. Impressiveness of victories, New England 20, Atlanta 9. DVOA, New England 1, Atlanta 3. That's more like it when we start getting into this. Offensive DVOA, New England 2, Atlanta 1. And defensive DVOA, New England 16, Atlanta 27. In terms of passing offensive yardage, New England 4th, Atlanta 3rd. Rushing offensive yardage, New England 7th, Atlanta 5th. Passing defensive yardage, New England 12th, Atlanta 28th. And rushing defensive yardage, New England tied for 3rd, Atlanta 17th. One of the questions as we have gone through in the playoffs here, when you're looking at the strength of Atlanta defensively, this is something that you referenced as far as Aaron Rodgers in the NFC Championship game. Vic Beasley, with the effect that he's had, and he was not solely responsible for what happened to Green Bay in the first half there, but the way that he has come on this season, the way that Atlanta has come on, this is one of these things where if you look at their statistics past the point when they got very, very hot down the stretch, it tells a little bit of a different story as opposed to their very poor DVOA ranking of 27th for the season. So it becomes a matter of, is it possible to regard Atlanta by looking at them in the vacuum of the last 2 months or so? One of the great all-time examples I think that we tend to think about as far as you throw all that stuff out when you get to the playoffs, actually 10 years ago, if you remember the Indianapolis Colts in that run to the Super Bowl, Bob Sanders, I think that's the thing we always kind of point to as far as a player being a difference maker. I have grave doubts about Vic Beasley being able to be on the level of a Bob Sanders difference maker when you look at how Atlanta has performed through the playoffs. Because, again, some of what Green Bay did was garbage time. I'll give you that. But I referenced the previous week what Seattle did in their opening drive. And I realize sometimes you got to throw that out the window because it's pre-scripted. But the way that Atlanta has played defensively throughout the playoffs does not remind me of how Indianapolis played in the playoffs that year. You remember that really fugly 15-6 win over Baltimore that they had that year? We were all scratching our heads like that didn't feel like a Colts kind of a game. That kind of showed that the Colts had turned a little bit of a corner defensively in a way that I'm not seeing from Atlanta, Kyle.
I'm glad you brought up Beasley, because Beasley was the subject of the article that I kind of referenced at the outset that Bill Barnwell wrote today on ESPN.com. And pressure rate has been the key for this Falcons defensive turnaround in the playoffs. You know, Seattle's got a pretty good offense at times, at least, you know, when they've got their full complement of weapons. And then Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay were as hot as any team in the league. And their defense has held those two teams to 41 points total. And it's been all about the pressure. I think the pressure rate is the highest among all playoff teams. And it's been led by Beasley. So what's the blueprint to beating Tom Brady in the past? That's bringing pressure. If you look at his playoff losses, the commonality is he was sacked a lot more than usual. The New York Giants in both Super Bowls, and then he had that, you know, the Jets when they pulled the upset, and they certainly had a quarterback a lot less talented than Matt Ryan when they did that. It was Mark Sanchez, and Baltimore went to New England the 1 year. They brought a lot of pressure. So, yeah, you do get the feeling it's all about whether or not Atlanta can pressure Brady, and a lot of that does fall on Beasley specifically because he's kind of, you don't want to say single-handedly, but it's been pretty close to single-handedly been the guy who's reversed their numbers in that department. So, you know, New England's offensive line, a lot better than Seattle, certainly. Seattle kind of has a, you know, bit of a turnstile crew there in front of Russell Wilson. But Green Bay's offensive line was fairly well-regarded, and they did not hold up well at all against Atlanta's pass rush. So, well, I think so much of the focus in the media leading up to the game is Atlanta's top-ranked offense versus New England's top-ranked defense. You know, I think Atlanta's defense, whether or not they can do something, may actually be the difference in the game.
Yeah, and the whole thing about top offense versus top defense, you go back to, I believe, the last time it happened, which was Seattle and Denver, and
yeah,
that year was absolute peak Seahawk defensively. There were no asterisks by them. They didn't play the 32nd best schedule in the league. That defense is one of the greatest of all time. This New England defense, again, does not appear as good as the numbers. You have said, and
no,
you've been right about this, that a lot of it's been sort of bend but don't break with them. So it's certainly deceiving to say best offense versus best defense, because it is far from a consensus in the league that New England has the best defense. On the offensive line, something that is going to be a real, real, real issue here, as has been pointed out to me by a couple of my friends, not least of which FBH Lounge dignitary Steve Callis, who follows such things, the return of Dante Scarnecchia as offensive line coach for the Patriots. They have been noted for getting the most out of what they have at various positions, and pretty much few positions more so over the course of their long run than the offensive line. Having that guy in there coaching them, that's going to be a real help, because you know those guys are just sitting in the film room thinking about Beasley 24/7 leading up to the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like what you referenced. I agree with you about New England's defense not being as good as the numbers suggest. Now, I think they've allowed 17 or less points in 12 games this year. It's either like 11 or 12. That's quite a bit. But would you agree with me that it would not be right to compare this matchup? You referenced the game, and I'm glad you did, because I was going to ask this question anyway. I don't think it's fair to compare this year's matchup to that Seattle-Denver one, because this New England defense isn't Seattle's defense. Now, a case could be made that Atlanta's offense is Denver's offense, though. Like, when we talk of, you know, we talk about the qualifiers with New England's defense, I don't think there's any debate right now that Atlanta's got the best offense in the league, right?
Yeah, I think they settled that on the field with the Packers, to be sure, because they were going up against, at least through the course of the season, a better defense than what Green Bay was facing. But this whole question now of how good is Atlanta's defense, and again, like the 06 Colts, is it fair to rate them by what they did all year? Because, again, they didn't have Bob Sanders the whole year. That was a guy who always had trouble staying healthy, but it's because he played with such physicality And he was not the biggest of guys, but when I talk on the show about somebody being a force multiplier, that guy will always be like exhibit A for that, as far as somebody who just made everybody around him better by the fact that everybody had to account for him. And for Atlanta, I think the biggest question going into the game is, because I think we would agree, Kyle, that if that number 27 ranking in DVOA, I go to that great line of Dennis Reynolds from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia here, this does not define me, this does not define me. If that 27 number defines Atlanta, they have no chance of winning this game. They only have a chance to win the game if they are playing more so along the lines of what they've been able to do the last 2 months or so. And I talked about this coming into the playoffs as far as when you look at teams with the really great offenses, how good do the defenses have to be? You look at New Orleans when they won a Super Bowl in 2009, they were 20th in defensive points allowed. And I talked about the St. Louis Rams turn of the century, 1999, fourth in defensive points allowed. 2001, seventh in defensive points allowed. A team that was much better on that side of the ball than we tend to remember. Maybe it's because we're thinking about the 2000 Rams a lot. 31st in defensive points allowed, which was last, as that is the year before the Houston Texans entered the league. So that donut hole season, I think we would agree, probably kept them out of the Super Bowl because they just couldn't stop teams at all. The offense was as good that year as it was in their 2 years. I want to say also, too, we go back to this with the Falcons, and me, you, and a lot of people have held a grudge historically that they broke up what would have been one of the great Super Bowls ever in 1998, Denver and Minnesota settling it on the field in Super Bowl 33 in 1999, in January of 99. I was thinking about this as I was looking at the recent history. I don't know if it's quite on that level, but in 2000, if the Rams could have gotten there, now granted, it would have been a total battle of movable object versus resistible force in terms of Baltimore's offense against Seattle's defense. But what about the greatest show on turf against the 2000 Ravens defense? We were kind of deprived of a great one there.
Yeah, that's one that I don't think people remember. But that Rams team was not – it was weird. They were – there was a definite nosedive between 99 and 01 for them. That team was not on the same level. Like, I don't think that was the second best. I'd have to look. But that was not the second best team in the league that year, in my opinion.
Yeah.
That Rams team, they noticeably dropped. So I want to ask you something. Do you not think Atlanta can win a shootout?
I think they can. I think there's a scenario for it, but there are limits to it. There are limits to what they can give up to New England and overcome that, because New England, I think, whatever we say about this as far as, you know, whatever qualifiers we put on it, well, New England's not the number one defense in the league, or it's arguable that they are. It is, I think, inarguable. Even if we grade Atlanta on the scale of the last 2 months or so, if we grade them on that generous curve, New England is going against a weaker defense. So,
yes,
the limit to what you can allow Brady, I would say, it's probably 30, 31 points if you're Atlanta and you're going to win. Don't you think so?
Yes, because I think it would be fair to assume that Atlanta is going to score less here than per usual.
Okay, yeah.
Would you not agree with that? I don't think Atlanta's going to hit their average of 34.4 points per game in this game. I'd be surprised if they did. New England's allowed 25 or more only twice all year, and they've allowed 30 only once. It was, ironically, the one game that Brady lost to Seattle at home, a Sunday night game. So, you know, Atlanta, again, Matt Ryan, we should talk about this too. New England's defense, it's not just bend but don't break. They faced some pretty crappy quarterbacks down the stretch. Would you like to hear the list here? Because I actually have it.
Go ahead. Go ahead, buddy.
This is the eight they faced before Ben Roethlisberger last year.
Roethlisberger.
Colin Kaepernick, Ryan Fitzpatrick twice, Jared Goff, Joe Flacco's fine, Trevor Siemian, Matt Moore, and Ryan Brock Osweiler. That's bad. That's a real bad list of quarterbacks right there.
It's funny. I'm going to date myself a little bit here. I have an old throwback Nat Moore jersey. I think I'd rather face Nat Moore at quarterback at this stage of his life, if he's still alive. I don't even know that. Yeah. That's ignorance on my part.
Matt Ryan. No, I was just saying Matt Ryan. He may be the MVP of the league, so it's not even like the fact that he's clearly better than all those guys. I mean, it's like night and day. Now, New England did shut down Ben Roethlisberger, who's still, you know, a top. You know, I'm just going to throw out a random number, top six quarterback in the league, probably.
True. But, again, historically they've always had his number, so I think that's got to kind of factor in a little bit there.
True.
It is funny as far as just some of the oddities about quarterbacks and other players here, something I wanted to segue into, because I was thinking to myself here that we've had a situation where, and again, coming into the playoffs, it really kind of changed the competitive landscape here. You had Tennessee poised to make the playoffs. Mariota goes down. Oakland makes the playoffs. It's too late to give them the hook and pull them out of there, even though they didn't have Derek Carr. Like, what if something happened on football's biggest stage? We're not used to seeing something like that. And then my eye kind of caught something on the Atlanta roster. Do you know who, and no fair looking this up if you don't know off the top of your head, you know who Atlanta's backup quarterback is?
No, I don't.
Matt Schaub. Suppose Matty Ice goes down, and Matt Schaub, on his old field, has to come in and try and save the day, albeit we know he wouldn't be able to, but you talk about storylines coming out of that, and you talk about audio that I'm going to be pimping forever if it ever happens. That's kind of a weird scenario there, isn't it? Nobody's even talking about that this week.
Well, because who the hell wants to see Matt Ryan get injured? You ought to be ashamed of yourself for bringing that up.
Well, it doesn't mean I couldn't exploit a bad thing by being prescient if it did happen. But, yeah, that was just something
here,
I noticed.
Can I say something along the same line?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
If Donald Trump got injured, do you know who would have to come in?
Mike Pence.
Yeah. Matt Schaub don't sound so bad anymore to me.
That's outstanding. Well, another little notable about players here, and something that is indicative of very, very good teams and organizations versus horrible teams, there is a myth out there. There is a profound, profound myth that I won't say our, I'll say my, Cleveland Browns, since coming back into the league in 1999, they're always held up as the example of the most pathetic team in the league, and rightfully so. One of the biggest myths is this team never has any talent. No, this team doesn't lock down the talent that it has, because there are former Browns represented on both sides. More prominently, I think we would agree, on Atlanta's side. On New England's side, Jabal Sheard at defensive end. Running back Deion Lewis, you might have heard of him with what he did in the playoffs this year. Nice little scat back guy, able to make things happen situationally. Linebacker Barkevious Mingo, boy, is it going to be weird seeing him in a Super Bowl for the big bust that he's been for most of his career. For Atlanta, center Alex Mack, wide receiver Taylor Gabriel, two of the guys who've been among the top performers on the Falcons' offense this year. So, basically, that's what really good organizations do. They sort of sift through all the manure on a franchise, pluck out a couple of the, I don't know if you want to call them diamonds or whatever, but these guys, at the very least, are imitation diamonds, some of them, and they're able to sparkle on the biggest stage on Sunday.
Yeah. I was just reading something that totally caught my eye. I'm going to throw you for a total curveball here with Vic Beasley.
Okay.
He apparently is the sharp choice right now as Super Bowl MVP. I guess, you know, Vaughn Miller, it was a defensive player last year. He was 25-1 at the sports books. And Vic Beasley right now, who opened 100-1 on Thursday, is now down to 50-1. So there's a lot of people liking Vic Beasley as the long shot MVP.
I totally understand that, because with a lot of the weapons that Atlanta has offensively, you got to figure again, the scenario where Atlanta wins this game is that they end up holding Brady to a lesser output than he's had in most of his previous Super Bowls. So he would then get attention for that whilst the vote is being split among a bunch of spoilers, if we want to use the political parlance here, of Matt Ryan spoiling it for Devontae Freeman, spoiling it for Julio Jones. Yeah, as the one guy that people would be paying attention to on the defensive side of the ball, unless this is another one of these weird scenarios where a cornerback on the other team goes off, in which case if Al Davis was still alive, he would sign him to an exorbitant free agent contract in the off season. But, barring that kind of a scenario, Vic Beasley would be a very good choice for that. Now, before getting to the actual pick on the game, something that you're probably going to kind of scoff at a little bit here, but a strong piece of history that favors, I think, one team. At the very least, this should be good for getting a strong reaction out of you. I was looking at this here and the whole thing of when you were talking about this, about teams that have been there, by God, versus teams that haven't. I was looking at the history of football in the 21st century, and there's been a strong commonality between the decades here. I think you have to go back to the 1930s into the 40s or the late 1950s into the 60s to find the kind of commonality that we've seen here. Do you know, Kyle Ross, that 14 of the 17 Super Bowls, counting this one this week here, have included at quarterback out of the AFC, Brady, Peyton Manning, Roethlisberger, 14 of the 17. So we have a situation that I refer to. Yes. So I refer to this essentially as the plutocracy v. the squatters when I look at this, because the NFC has just been a turnstile in the 21st century. 10 different teams have made the Super Bowl in the 21st century out of the NFC. The only four that have not have been Detroit, Minnesota, Dallas, San Francisco. And you go back into the 90s and you knock off Dallas and San Francisco there. So in the last 20 years or so, the NFC has really been the socialist paradise, if you will, in terms of these teams making it there. Now, I have singled out four games that I'm exempting from what I'm about to say as far as plutocracy v. squatters.
Well, wait a minute, hold on.
Yeah.
There's 16 teams in the NFC, though. There's six that wouldn't have made it.
That, then 12 have made it, I guess. You're right about that. You're right. Oh. My math is embarrassingly bad. Washington,
okay.
Dallas, Detroit, and Minnesota. So, yeah, because the entire NFC South has made it. The entire NFC West has made it. Chicago and Green Bay out of the North. Philly and the Giants out of the East. So, yeah, 12. Wow, that's even worse. 12 teams have made it. So, now there have been, when you look at repeat teams making it, and I'm going to exempt for the moment here Carolina, because there was a decade plus between their two trips to the Super Bowl. That was sort of coincidental with them. And I'm going to say the same thing for Seattle's first Super Bowl this century versus the next two. I think you would agree with me there's not a lot of commonality, not a lot of crossover between the players on those teams. So the Seattle and the Giants teams that made it within a couple of years of one another here, where they had a decent core of players that came back, I'm referring to those teams as the wannabe plutocracy. The wannabe plutocracy is 3-1 against the plutocracy this century here. But when you're just looking at the plutocracy v. the squatters, I'm going to give you the games right here. Now, again, a little bit questionable in including St. Louis in this because they had just been in the Super Bowl 2 years previously, but they would not make it again after this. So I'm including that one in there. New England, St. Louis, New England, Carolina, New England, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Seattle, Indianapolis, Chicago, Pittsburgh, Arizona, New England, Indianapolis, Green Bay, Pittsburgh, and Denver, Carolina. We had a number of years there where that was not the case. 3 years where Brady, Manning, Roethlisberger were not in there. Baltimore Giants, Baltimore, San Francisco, Tampa Bay, Oakland. The plutocracy is 7-2 against the squatters, Kyle Ross, this century here. So it's an interesting kind of a thing that when you're looking at this whole thing, you were kind of poo-pooing it of like, oh, experience, whatever. I'm not necessarily chalking it up to experience. I'm not necessarily saying that's what it is. But there's something that's causing this. There's something that's causing a lot of these teams that are going through the turnstile in the NFC. Oh, it's our turn. We're there this year. Yay! They're just not really getting it done. 2 times out of 9 is not a lot of times, Kyle.
Well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of factors in that. I mean, I would take a look. A lot of those teams are overachievers that regress the next year. I don't know. Do we think Atlanta's a team that's going to regress severely next year? I don't think so. Like Carolina, coming into this year, we both said they were going to regress.
Right.
I'm not going to pick Atlanta to regress very severely next year. I think Atlanta's this is something, you know, we've gone, you know, what now? A half hour, 40 minutes, not even saying. This is the first time in a while. Well, I suppose that, you know, I shouldn't say a while because I think maybe the Denver-Seattle game was 1-2. And who knows, maybe even New England and Seattle was 1-2. But so I guess that point is not well made. But
you know, I'll just say this. It's the third time in 4 years we actually have the top two teams in the league that made it.
So well, you're right. Atlanta historically,
Atlanta's absolutely got to be number two in your pilot. They were number, I mean, these were the top two teams in my power rankings entering the playoffs. I'm not shocked at, you know, you were talking about casuals not knowing Atlanta. I'm not shocked at all that Atlanta's here.
No, I'm not either. I'm not either. But one of the things, and I actually think this is a little bit more troubling for Atlanta, is when I look at this team, when I look at this, this is only year two. You go back to that New England-Seattle Super Bowl, the last game where Dan Quinn was defensive coordinator for the Seahawks. This is only year two of the Dan Quinn project in Atlanta. So I agree with you that I'm not quite ready to sell on them. I'm at least ready to hold on them for next year, if not sell. But by the same token, and while this offense is really running, you know, at full efficiency right now, and this might be peak Falcons offensively, if we look on the historical continuum, this is not peak Falcons defensively. They're going to get better. You look at the growth curve over the 2 years of them with Dan Quinn, they should be better next year. They should be better the year after that. But at this moment in time, are they going to be good enough to beat New England? I think that might be the core question. Can they hold New England to enough for that offense to be able to thrive?
So you're picking New England, huh?
Well, you've been picking up on my lean throughout the show here. I'm going to compare this to something that good friend and fellow FDH Lounge dignitary Bob Glassman likes to do, and somebody that I've done some terrestrial radio with here in the Cleveland area. Bob being the bitter, sardonic fellow that he is when it comes to sports. I'm not intentionally aping him in this way, but my pick is going to have something in common with it. Bob's the kind of guy where, like, when the LeBron James Miami Heat were in the finals, he would bet on them because he was rooting against LeBron, but I was like, well, at least I'll get something out of it if they win. I believe he bet against the Cavs last year when they were in the finals. Wanted the Cavs to win, but was afraid they wouldn't, and, hey, at least I'll make some money if they don't. So I'm looking at this here. I want to be above 52.4% for the season. I really, really do, but not enough so to shade my pick here. Again, it's not so much loving Atlanta, although I spend a decent amount of time down there. I have family there. I got a Falcons shaving kit for Christmas a couple of years ago, for whatever that's worth. But I like Atlanta. That was a Christmas present I got. So, you know, I like the Falcons, but even my family that lives there isn't passionate about them. Nobody's passionate about the Falcons in Atlanta. Nobody really cares about pro sports in Atlanta. They're all transplants like my brother. So it's not even being pro-Falcons, but everyone knows, again, that I loathe the Patriots, not to the extent that I do the Squealers and the Ratbirds, and maybe a little bit more than I loathe Denver and, Elway out of the 1980s. I don't like New England at all, but I got to try and get this one right. And my gut on this one is New England covers it. The 3 to me seems kind of weak as far as a line goes. I don't see this being a field goal game. I'm going to say 27-20. That would make it the first Super Bowl in a decade to go favorite under, but only my favorite play is recommended. How do you see it, Kyle?
Oh, I like your play on the under because I wanted to know if you knew somewhere that I could bet Jason Jones total of 80 for this game because I would like to get down on that.
47 is my guess. But what's your guess for the game here?
It's funny that you talked about kind of the rationale you did in Bob Glassman's rationale. You did kind of a good Bob Glassman impression, by the way. It's kind of how he sounds. But New England's definitely the best team in the league, and Atlanta's definitely the second best team. And I keep thinking about it. I'm like, yeah, is Atlanta really going to win? And I'm like, you know, they could. I think their offense is the best. You know, we talk about their defense being the most suspect unit in the game. I think their offense is the best unit in the game overall. And I don't like doing it. You know, part of me, I'd be.
Sam's running out of the hourglass, buddy. What's it gonna be? Sam's running out of the hourglass.
Atlanta.
Where are you going?
+3. I don't like Donald Trump. That means I don't like Bill Belichick. That means I don't like Tom Brady. I think that the Atlanta Falcons will win and will lead this country to new frontiers. Thank you very much.
After hearing that, I got nothing. And I'll say enjoy Super Bowl Sunday, everybody. And thank you for joining us here for our FDH Lounge Super Bowl preview.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.